I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Figure. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they sink sardines. Will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
I understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Well, take him out, son. I mean that. Take him.
I'm Richard Keys.
And I am Andrew Gray.
At a distance, again, as we go through the recovery process after knee replacement surgery, and that's probably the best place to start again. Andy, how are you?
Yeah, good. Keezy, actually. I, as you know, I wasn't looking forward to this at all, having had some horror stories about pain and discomfort, but I've been remarkably pain-free, probably testimony to my surgeon rather than anything I've done. But good. I see him next Wednesday. And hopefully we'll get the all clear to travel back to Qatar and hopefully be back in the country before or at the end of the month.
Well, we very much look forward to that, my friend. Forgive me for getting a little poetic, but dependent upon where you are listening on the planet, spring is making itself known. As I sit here, looking out of my dining room window, the sun is setting. It's the most beautiful evening. Temperatures around about 20 degrees, Andy. The ocean is full of jet skis. And the Qatari weekend has indeed started, this being Thursday night. And I think there's a little bit of hope beginning to creep in that the summer around the globe might start to see better times. I don't think you'll be springing anywhere anytime soon, but hopefully back with us.
Oh, yeah,
but,
mate, surprise you, son. I might surprise
this
you.
This is the Keys and Gray podcast with myself, Richard Keys, and, of course, Andy Gray. And thank you very much for your reaction to last week's podcast when we spent time with Jeff Powell, a sports writer at the Daily Mail. So much knowledge, Andy, over so many decades. I actually could have ended up talking to him all day, and we were lucky to have some of his time last week. And if you haven't heard it, go back and have a listen, particularly his memories and recollections on the great Bobby Moore. Anyway, welcome all, particularly new listeners. Don't forget to subscribe and share on whatever platform you get your pods on. Every week we welcome listeners from a particular place in the world. Just going straight to it this week, Andy, no quiz. We have many listeners in this particular part of the world.
Like that, right.
Great supporters of the podcast. So hello and welcome to all of our listeners in Ireland, where I hope you've enjoyed a half-decent St. Patrick's Day. From Letterkenny in Donegal to Wicklow Town to Killarney in Kerry to Skibbereen in Cork, welcome and thank you. And I have to say a very special hello to all of those enjoying the view at the Gap of Dunloe this week.
While you're on St. Patrick's Day, because as you probably forgot, because it's not something you pay too much of an interest in, but you did happen to share a few days there with me many years ago. We both did, and you thoroughly enjoyed it. Cheltenham Festival, of course, is taking place this week.
Yes.
And yesterday was St. Patrick's Day, and the Irish had a fantastic day. Winner after winner after winner. So very strange to watch this through and see an empty Cheltenham. When you and I were there were 60,000 people there every day. But it was strange, but they got it off, and The Irish had a very, very good day at Cheltenham yesterday.
Don't get me going, but I should add that if Boris, you'd done the right thing 12 months ago, we probably wouldn't be in the mess that we currently are. That 60,000 that were there 12 months ago certainly played its part in passing COVID around the UK. Of that, there is no doubt. Anyway, you can follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Keys and Grey Pod. Keys and spell it out. K-E-Y-S and A-N-D, Grey, G-R-A-Y, Keys and Grey Pod. A couple of things before we join our guest this week, Andy, who once again will be joining us from the United States. I'm still struggling to get my head around this. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, trophies are for the ego. Your thoughts on that would be what?
Okay. I wanted to play football from as young as I can remember, because I've not got a huge ego at all to win trophies. Any sportsman who plays his sport wants to win. Otherwise, there is no point in playing your sport, in my opinion. Now, I know purists might disagree that it's not the winning, it's the taking part. Well, I actually think you might have got that the wrong way around.
Nonsense.
It's not the taking part, it's the winning. Certainly, that's what's mattered to me. I don't get that at all. Whether he's covering up for himself, I don't know. Whether he's buying himself more time, that if his team don't win something, he can turn around and say, well, not, we haven't won anything, but we are moving forward and we're building something holistically, I guess is the modern word, and we're improving all the time. No. I think when Mourinho went there, Casey, and won the Carabao Cup, won the Europa League and got into the Champions League, and they said, well, that was just a false start. No, it was only a false start because he didn't get time to complete his job there. But success breeds success. If you don't win anything, look at Tottenham. There's a classic example. Do Manchester United fans want to become Tottenham? There you go. Do you want to become Tottenham?
No.
They're under Pochettino. Fantastic to watch.
No.
Great entertainers. Loved watching them. Didn't win diddly squat. You want that?
Well, it was obviously a swipe at both Van Gaal and Mourinho, because he's saying that both left him with the big rebuild, which I don't necessarily think is true. Yes, Manchester United are second, probably will finish second, and he deserves great credit for that being the case. But let's not forget that in 2 years, Mourinho also finished second, describing that to you and I on Be In Sports as one of the greatest achievements of his career. And the reason for that was, bearing in mind, he said, what was going on behind the scenes, and because that group simply weren't good enough. But not only did he finish second, Andy, he also, as you rightly say, won two trophies. Now, that, for me, Ollie, is what you should be aiming at. And trophies, by the way, are not just for those who are lucky enough to have taken part, as you did, Andy, in the winning of numerous. They're for fans. And that is what I think Ollie there has forgotten. And I was really, as you can tell, quite angry when I read that, because I thought it was churlish. I thought it was totally unnecessary and very much the wrong thing to say. And I hope he's reflected upon it and thinks differently going forward. I really do.
Well, I think you'll have to. I mean, the Manchester United fans reading that and thinking, what does that mean, that if all he stays and he keeps thinking we're improving and he finishes second next year and has a couple of semi-finals and maybe a final, but another 4 years down the line, we haven't won anything.
No.
Is he going to turn around and say, well, don't worry about it, because we're still improving and we're still getting there and we're doing things the right way? No. Win. Win trophies.
Well, Wenger found out, Andy, when
sports,
he kept...
winning.
Yes, Arsene kept delivering fourth place and Arsenal fans weren't happy because they wanted trophies. Jamie Carragher, wrong, by the way, in my view. Mohamed Salah will not be staying Liverpool for the next few years. Carragher's argument is he's missed the boat for the big money. My belief is that he will leave Liverpool at the end of this season and he will be Juan Laporta's benchmark signing.
Do you think they've got the money? Do you think they've got the wherewithal to get them?
Yes, because I don't think either Spanish team, Andy, will either be allowed to get themselves into a situation where they can't trade. The government knows that so many people look at Spain and think Real Madrid and Barcelona immediately. They are flag carriers. It's important that they have success, and I cannot imagine anybody in that country allowing a continued demise, and both have been in demise recently.
Decline. They've been in decline as much as demise.
That's not what either wants. And of course, this week we have to mention, because we've talked about it so much, the accident, as Martin Samuel says here in the Mail, the accident that everyone could see coming, except the lawmakers. How lucky were we that we got away with it? But it is something that we have been talking about. And best wishes to Rui Patricio, who in the end wasn't as badly injured as we thought, but could very well have been. Just put the flag up.
It's not going to change, though, is it? It's not going to change.
I'm not sure, Andy, that it isn't. I think there's been a lot of conversations going on this week behind the scenes. If that had led to the sort of outcome that Peter Cech had to confront, I think it would have changed now. It's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Really is.
The thing that staggers me about this whole thing, the VAR thing, Casey, is that so many years down the line, having been promised utopia and everything being rosy in the garden and everything being perfect, we are continually tweaking, changing, altering, going back to trying something else. And it's like unbelievable. This is something that they said was ready, and patently is obvious that it wasn't. No one's thought everything through, and they keep tinkering with it, hoping that they'll fall lucky and everyone will be happy. But I actually think that the one good thing about this is that I don't think there's many people left out there that can hold a hand on their heart and say, do you know what? This has been a brilliant addition to professional football, quite simply it has.
No, where I would slightly disagree with you is I think it is ready. I think what they've delivered us is what they felt was going to lead to, utopia. But it can't, because they're looking for perfection in an imperfect sport. It's not ever going to be like that, and they can't deliver it. And the sooner they realise, the better. But I'm absolutely certain it'll be heads down, plough on. Just a quick word about Barnsley. What's been going on there, I think, is extraordinary. Valerian Ismail, who's taken his team to fifth now, on the back of, I think, 7-8 wins. Fantastic football, Andy.
Unbelievable.
But of course, he's, because their football is described in some quarters as vertical, in others by Wayne Rooney as the most direct team he's ever seen, by Tony Mowbray, who I like a lot, managed at Coventry, but Barnsley don't play football the way that Tony likes to see his football played. So what? It is having the most dramatic effect on his team, and I wish them all the very, very best, and I hope deeply that they come up playing that way, because that really will stir things up in the Premier League, and I would love to see that. I really, really would love to see that.
PJ, you ask Barnsley fans, here you go, guys and gals, you watch your team all these years. Are you enjoying what you're seeing? Oh, too bloody right. Well, this is the best it's ever been. Correct. Yeah. We keep saying it. All these purists who tell us there's only one way to play football, get off, leave us alone. The beauty of football is there isn't the right way, there isn't the wrong way. There are various ways, and we should embrace them all. And horses for courses. Barnsley are not going to be Manchester City.
No.
Of course they're bloody not.
No.
You know, they are what they are. So be what you are. And honestly, if the coach has got that like that, and he's in this amazing one, it's sensational. Enjoy it. Embrace it.
Yeah.
Might not last. Enjoy the damn thing while you can.
We need more respect for our work, says the coach. Why do teams not enjoy playing against us? Because we give everything from the first minute to the last. We respect the opponent, but we are fearless, and we're always focused on ourselves. Good luck to him. Love it. Tough to Tyke is the headline.
Yeah,
Ismail
absolutely
hits out at critics, slamming direct Barnsley style. As you said, get off. Right. Here's someone that would know plenty about that, in fairness, because he was amongst a side, Andy, that created style football. Wallop. Back to
front. I was going to say probably invented it, but I don't think they invented it. They just made it an art form.
Probably John Beck and Dion Dublin and those at Cambridge maybe invented it, or made brought it to our attention. But in fairness, you know, and I think he'll tell us that, there were good players in that side as well, and maybe the way they played their football didn't necessarily allow them to get the respect they deserved until they left clubs and moved on. And our guest today is one of those. Alive all the way from America once again. Lucky boy. If you follow him on Instagram, you can see his lifestyle is almost as enjoyable as ours, Andy. He went from being a gangster to an entertainer. And his name is Warren Barton. Wazza! How are you doing, my friend?
I'm very well, gentlemen. I'm very well. I'm looking forward to this. I'm slightly nervous, but looking forward to
it. What? How could you be nervous?
What are you nervous for?
We're former work colleagues. What are you talking about, nervous?
Two celebrities. But no, always good to talk to you, gentlemen. Always good to talk to you.
I still have so many fond memories, Warren, of our time together in 2010, covering a World Cup for Fox Sports without any access to the World Cup.
That was brilliant, wasn't it? No pictures.
No pictures, no video, no sound, but we made it
I remember, Warren, remember we lived our life on pictures from Getty. That was all we had.
I think we probably
had to superimpose and move it around just to make it look like it was reality.
I think we invented podcasts, you know, because we were doing what is being done more regularly now before anyone else. Welcome to our World Cup coverage from South Africa. Now, here's a few training pictures. And Warren, you've been looking around.
can you break it down, Andy? Here's a picture of a coach. Can you now tell us what system they're going to play for?
No, Warren, absolutely this. I remember for the first time in my life as well, remember when we were there and when we were just rehearsing. Now, rehearsing, we don't really rehearse, but I can remember the guys there when they were working with us. They used to tell us about 2 hours before we went on the air, right, you're going to get 30 seconds because let us hear what you're going to say. And I used to say, well, I don't know what I'm going to say. Do you still do that?
Oh, yes. And the rundowns. You remember the rundowns? I remember Richard. We were in the executive office and they walk in with the producers, directors, and they're all obviously excited because you guys have come over and it's obviously a big thing. And the rundown was put on the table. It was about as thick as an autobiography. And Richard went, we won't be doing that. We ripped that up. He threw it away, put his feet on the table, had a cup of tea and said, well, we're going to go over there. And then we'll just let it roll. And they was petrified because they rehearsed more than Spielberg. It was an experience.
Oh, I know. And I can remember.
But it's still the same, Andy. It's still the same. Oh, it's still the same.
I can remember when we said, when we were sitting in the studio and Richard and I went, yeah, guys, of course, Geezy and I want open talkback. And the guy went, you what? We said, well, we like open talkback. He said, what? You want to hear what's been said in the gallery? And we've gone, yeah. And Geezy's gone, well, yeah, if there's a problem, I need to know. And they're going, oh, we've never done this before.
You're getting technical.
It was a learning curve for everybody. We made a good show.
We loved it.
It was a learning curve for everybody.
The talkback is you're in a position to be able to hear what's being said as the show is created. But my abiding memory, Warren, as we sat down to do the first show and we went over things again, I do remember a producer coming up and saying, hey, Richard, when we start, are you going to take this a whole lot more seriously? and it was great fun. Anyway, so nervous bollocks. It's nice to be back in your company. How are you? How is life over
it
there?
Does.
Yeah, no, life is great. I made a big call 8 years ago to come out to America with my wife and three young boys at the time. And, you know, it's been great for me here. The media side's been good. I've been able to do some coaching. I've done some coaching at LA Galaxy. I've been able to coach my kids as well through middle school and right through high school. And that was a big reason for me to come here is to be with the family. But now they're getting older. They don't need their dad anymore. They're driving. The only time they come for me is for money.
Of course.
So other than that, life is good. You know, it's I do miss, and I probably like you guys, I do miss the football in the UK, in England, and, you know, being around stadiums. And obviously the pandemic that we've had has been awful for everybody, and it's still in California, still at a high risk. So we've got to be careful. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel. But I've thoroughly enjoyed my time here. And there's certain things I miss of England, but definitely not the cold, the damp and the rain.
But then, you know, my life here has been exciting. The football, as you know, when you come over in 2010, is getting bigger and better. Took a lot more serious, the facilities, the players, the coaches. And soccer, as they say over here, is on the rise. And it's like a juggernaut. And it reminds me, gentlemen, of when you was, you know, the Premier League burst at the early 90s, 92, 93. A big boom, the Premier League, Sky, everything was involved in it. It's got that same feel about it now at the moment. Only going to go one way, and it's getting bigger and bigger.
Well, I follow you on Instagram, Warren, as you know, and occasionally I'm mildly envious of your lifestyle. But you deserve it. You deserve it because you took a gamble and you made it work. And to that, you deserve all the success that you're currently enjoying. So good luck to you. Now, let's go back to that period you mentioned. How did a gangster become an entertainer?
Well, part of the crazy gang, and you know, I'm sure Andy would know at that time, it was a little bit different, to say the least, where we was together as a team. We wasn't the most technical team as players individually, but as a team, we had that spirit and togetherness and that fight. And coming from non-league, being told twice I was too small, wasn't going to make it. So it was a little bit of a different period as a player, not through academy, and then you make it in the reserves and play first team. I had to drop down into lower league, had then the chance to go to the crazy gang, and it was wonderful because I bought into what they was doing, although I didn't sometimes agree with it. But if you disagree with it, they would just burn your clothes and slash your tyres on your car and lock you in the boot for about 2 or 3 hours. So you sort of take that on board.
Hold on. Hold on. You serious? They would lock you in a boot?
Yeah, we did it to Andy Clark. We did it to a couple of people, actually.
Brilliant.
You would, obviously, there were different tests that you was done, and we would cut the clothes up. And if you was a bit annoyed with that, we would then strip you in a puddle. And that would be another thing when the media day was there. And then the last but not least, if you really didn't like it, we would all pick you up and throw you in someone's boot, maybe John Fashanu or Vinnie Jones, and lock you in there for 2 hours while we was training to make you understand what it was all about. And quickly, people found out, I don't want to be locked in a boot for 2 hours. We did it to Andy Clark. No. We didn't realise he was claustrophobic. He was a young player that had come from Barnet. And he hurt his wrist. He nearly broke his wrist trying to get out of the car because obviously he was claustrophobic in there. And we didn't realise a lot of this, gentlemen, as well, is it was initiated by the owner, which is Sam Amann. You think maybe Vinnie Jones or Fash. Yeah. It was the owner that would say, you know, I was selected with England when I was there, which was quite unusual. Terry Phelan was in the Irish squad, or Keith Kell got into the England squad. He was the one that slashed your tyres on your car. So I had a Saab at the time, and I was living week by week with my money and enjoying it. And I come into the car park and my tyres is all slashed. So I went to Vinny and said, look, you're out of order. I haven't got the money to pay for it. You're wrong. He went, I didn't do it. And then you see the owner in the corner chuckling and laughing. And it was him. It was him that had slashed your tyres. And he was supposed to be the sensible one of the group. And he's the one that would have that. And you remember, guys, you know, in the tunnel, when Sky first having us in the tunnel and the players all together, where before in the Football League, that wasn't really, we would have win a lot of our games against Coventry, Southampton.
Get off.
You know, these type of stuff.
Yeah, we would win in the tunnel. You mentioned Coventry, Warren. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Coventry. When they was in the Premier League, we would actually beat them. And, you know, we would have that success of beating them in the tunnel. Fash would come out, the music would be blaring, he'd have his top off, and he would then obviously come out with his top and say, well, who was it, Bubba? Who's the one that said it? And someone would have said something in the paper, and then it was all off in the tunnel. You know, it was all kicking off in the tunnel, and we would win a lot of the games then. So it was amusing.
Hang on, Andy, hold on. Andy, before you say anything else, let me just do the right thing and say, for those of a sensitive nature who find those stories unacceptable, we do apologise, and we condemn entirely that kind of behaviour. Yeah. There you go. Yes. Okay, carry on, Andy.
Absolutely.
There was no violence.
No one's going to see it.
It wasn't violent.
I didn't say it was, but somebody had upset somebody.
You were just intimidating. What was going to see us? How many games then? Let's say 20 games. How many games would you think where you knew stood in the tunnel? This team is absolutely petrified of us. They are really scared about playing us. Not because of your football ability necessarily, because of what was going to happen when Fash and Vinny and all them get out there.
I would say we'd looked at, as I said, the Southamptons, the Norwich, the Coventrys at the time that was in the tunnel. You know, we'd say a good 15 points we would pick up beforehand. And that's what we knew. And then we'd fancy our chances against Man United and Arsenal. We respect them, but we was never in fear of them. And Sir Alex Ferguson probably has the greatest comment when Manchester United beat us at Selhurst Park. He put it in his book and said, once we didn't get intimidated by Wimbledon, I knew we'd win the league. He knew they'd beat Arsenal or beat Chelsea, and the quality that they had with Cantona, Mark Hughes, Steve Bruce, all them wonderful, you know, strong Brian Robson, throw him in there as well. They knew they'd beat the big teams, but it was against someone like us on a Tuesday. And that famous tackle, anyone wants to have a look at Cantona and Vinnie Jones on YouTube. I mean, it was in the first 4 minutes and he tackled him on his waist. and Cantona got up, didn't react. Points come running over, Dennis Irwin, Hughes. He knew Fergie then that they would win the title. Which again, you know, there was a little bit more to us than that, but that was a big strong point that we had to be physical because we didn't have the natural ability of some of the great players at that time. So we knew we had to match up. But we did, going back to your question, Richard, you know, we did have players that could play.
There you go. Yeah.
Going from a crazy gang player to then an entertainer was a mark of success. You know, John Scales went to Liverpool. Keith Curl went to Man City. And then the conveyor belt go along. And, you know, Dennis Wise obviously went to Chelsea and had a great career there and won loads of trophies.
Yeah,
so, you know, there was a lot of players that could play. But a big part of it was like buying in to work with. I'll just tell you a quick story as well at Plough Lane. We was playing against Everton, your old team, Andy, and unusually, there was a scuffle in the middle of the pitch with Vinny and a couple of, I think Kevin Ratcliffe come running over. So I'm talking about, you know, players that wouldn't back down. Kevin Ratcliffe was a player that was going to be in the middle of it. So I was trying to be the middleman and break it up a little bit. Well, John Fashion come over and nearly forearmed my arm and nearly broke it and pushed it together. And there was a little scuffle. So I'm walking in the tunnel at half time, walking in. Fashion has literally picked me up off my feet and threw me against the laundry door. So I'm like, Fash, what's up? There's a few other words that I was petrified because I thought he's going to kill me. He went, don't ever do that again. And I went, what do you mean? He went, it's always us against them, whoever it is. And that togetherness, as well as some players that could play, kept us in top 10. My seasons was 8th and 9th in the league. So there was an inkling straight away after my third or fourth game with the crazy gang is like, it's us against them, and don't ever stop that because we need that. And if you remember as well, Arsenal used to do that with Bold and Adams and Keogh.
Yeah,
Man United did it with the likes of Roy Keane. It was that togetherness as well as their ability to go and win it. And for us, that's what we used. And, you know, that was a learning curve for me straight away. I was a 20-year-old boy playing in the Premier League, and you got your captain nearly trying to kill you because he wants you to stick together. So that was, okay, I buy into that. I understand what we're doing.
Just a couple of things on that, Warren. One, you were too pretty to get involved in that kind of thing. So I'm glad you learned quickly to stay a pace
or
two back.
Good point, Richard. Correct. Good point.
Secondly, I do take exception to the continual mention of how easy you found it to beat Coventry. But as you speak, I will share this story with you. Comes to mind of George Boateng making his debut for us at Arsenal. Again, in the tunnel. Richard Shaw is the man in front of him, turns to George and says, right, don't piss these off today. If we don't do that, we'll get out of here with a 3-0. Let's just take that. And that was a 3-0 defeat.
Yeah, exactly.
So I get what you're saying about the Super Sky Blues, but you know, times change.
Richard, would you like to tell the story about the crazy game when you did a TV hit down the tunnel, or would you like me to remind you of that? Andy would have been laughing in the studio.
You can tell your side of it, but I'll give you mine. We decided we were going to Selhurst Park tunnel, and we decided that in this era we were going to introduce the program live from various different places, center circle. I mean, what I always wanted to do was what's ended up being the case these days, pitch side, something like that. But we're going to open this program in the tunnel at Selhurst Park. And, of course, to the left, I don't know who told you, but the crazy gang discovered that I was going to be there. So no sooner did the titles
roll.
We was watching
it on TV.
I was just going to say, you must have been, because the minute I said, you know, something to do with crazy gangs in Selhurst Park. I was lifted from my feet and I was taken into the dressing room and the door was shut. And I'm thinking, shit, I mean, now we are in trouble. Fortunately, I think the cameraman managed to get in there. And then, of course, came the liniment and the everything else that went with being kidnapped by the crazy gang. Tie was cut. And then I was I was sent back into the tunnel. But where you see, Andy, I was too smart for them. I'd already planned for this and I'd taken another outfit with me.
So by the way, to be fair, Keezy, if I remember rightly, the outfit you wore in the first place was a shocker anyway, so it didn't really matter.
No, they were great, Warren. It was always a warm welcome. But the question still stands. Oh, two things. One, Barnsley, before you came on, we were talking Barnsley, back to front. There's two ways of playing football. I think you'd agree with us. I hope they make it, and I hope they go in and stir up the Premier League the same way as you guys did. But secondly, that spell at Newcastle, what was that like? You've worked in a team that prided themselves on defending, and all of a sudden, it's the other end that mattered more.
It was wonderful. You know, I think the area, the region, the passion that comes from the Northeast in general, I think, you know, I throw Sunderland and even Middlesbrough into that. But Newcastle is a unique club in the sense that the people work hard Monday to Friday to go to the stadium to watch the game in that region. You know, if you're born in that area, you've got no choice. You're going to be a Newcastle fan. And it was a special time. And to have someone like Kevin Keegan with his style, and you're talking about dress sense, Richard. I mean, he had no dress sense, Kevin Keegan. So he was very much in your area as well.
He wasn't
the best. He made John Travolta look like Giorgio Armani. So he was, it was a special, special time in the sense that the stadium was getting built, the area where there was new bars, restaurants, apartments being built. It was a real unique time in the mid-90s. And then the style of football that Kevin Keegan had already started to play with Andy Cole and Peter Beardsley and Rob Lee. Yeah. And then you throw on top of that a Les Ferdinand, a David Ginola, David Batty and Tino Asprilla into that style of football, the players that you already had. And people talk about Pep Guardiola with his fullbacks, how he wants them to play. Kevin wanted us to do the same thing, but wanted us to play wider to allow Ginola and Keith Gillespie to have the space in midfield and for Peter Beardsley to get on the ball. But it was just a special time. I remember meeting Kevin in the hotel in Kensington in London. He'd come down. It was, a bank holiday Monday, and Alan Shearer was playing for Blackburn against Newcastle and scored the goal at the far post with a header against John Beresford. It was a big, big time when Blackburn was trying to win the title. And Kevin had come down to see me and he just said, come and join. It's a special club and you're going to love it. And it was a wonderful time. You know, gentlemen, when you used to go up there for any game in the Northeast, you know, the people, the city,
brilliant.
The passion that you could feel walking to the stadium as everyone was dressed in their black and white. And even coming from the South, you know, it was totally different. At Wimbledon, we against Bolton, we might have 2,000 or 3,000 people for a Premier League game. We used to have 5,000 people to watch us train at Newcastle. Mm. And that's the that's the passion in that area, in that region. Probably, you know, Celtic and Rangers is only the club, I think, at the moment that would compete in the fans being so passionate about their team. Yeah. I know other fans are passionate, but it's more global. This was about, you go into the train from London into the northeast, into Newcastle, the first thing you see is the football stadium.
Yes.
So, yeah, it has great, great, great memories. The football that we played, the thing that every day I wake up and every day I'm disappointed, not for me, not for, even for Kevin, really, but for the people of the Northeast, that we never won the title because the style of football, but we just never had that winning mentality, that thing that could get us over the line. And we had the ability, we had the players.
I think I look at the squad,
Andy, and as I said, every day I think about it, is that we'd only had Peter Beardsley that had won it. And Peter was a great captain, but he wasn't a leader of men. He led by example. So we never had that Brian Robson, Roy Keane, Steve Bruce to go forward. Kevin was never going to deviate from his style of football. He was always going to try and win it as well. You remember them great games against Liverpool, 4-3. And the big game that sticks in mind for me is when Cantona scored the 1-0, which was actually 25 years ago, a couple of weeks ago. We absolutely battered them in the first 45 minutes. Yeah, Mike would make save after save. We'd hit the crossbar. We was relentless. And instead of maybe coming in now, I know hindsight's a great thing, and sitting down as a group and Kevin Keegan to say, right, we ain't getting beat now. We've showed them. We're still 12 points clear. Do not get beat in this game. Kevin turned around and said, go and show them again. Go and show them again. And we got the sucker punch. We got done on the counter-attack, 1-0, and just the whole belief drained out of that stadium. If anyone goes back and watches it, the silence in a stadium that was absolutely erupting of nearly 40,000 people, you could hear a pin drop because the belief popped with everybody in that time. And I think they're the big moments, Andy, and you've done it. You've won things. Is there the turning points that we just didn't have? And the harder we tried, the worse it got. And then Kevin started playing Tino in the team, took Keith Gillespie out, changing formation, changing a little bit of the shape. And we just couldn't get our momentum back. And great credit to them. I think they went 15 games out of 17 winning.
Just
grinded away and just kept chipping away. And at the end, everybody remembers that remark with Kevin Keegan, you know, we'd love it if we beat him. But I think we knew deep down. And also, Andy, Richard, you said it as well, being the entertainers, we always played on either a Sunday night or a Monday night football, which is obviously a big deal. Man United was playing on a Saturday against Southampton, winning 1-0, playing at the weekend against, you know, another team as well, winning 1-0. And we had to wait, and they was watching us. And it was like, okay. I remember sitting there with Les Ferdinand, watching game after game, thinking, here we go. We've got to churn out another result. We've got to churn out. And it just started to mount the pressure.
You know the reason for that one? The reason for that is that in those days, we used to have to put to air three times, two home games and one on the road, every team in the Premier League. And that left us with about five or six freebies. And of course, the welcome we used to get from Sir John and a dinner at Wynyard Hall and Kevin would come. And it was such an enjoyable experience to keep going back that all of those games were taken up. We said, well, let's go watch the entertainers again. You know, fancy a night in Newcastle.
It's your fault. It's you two's fault. It's not our fault. It's your fault.
Well, in a way, because we were treated so well and I loved. And you know what? I have the very same feelings as you. I know Kevin now. Andy and I got to know him really well working now in this part of the world. I really do wish that you'd got over the line. I wanted it then.
Yeah, me too.
Do you know what? I'll look back on it and wish it even more now. And it wouldn't have adversely affected United, would it, to have missed one? But it was such a fabulous period. And what he created was, well, it's something that we're still talking about now, isn't it? Obviously. Sadly, probably won't be as good again.
And you touched on it as well with Sir John Hall, the owner. You know, he was part of making... if you like, the brand. He wanted Newcastle to go globally as the Premier League was growing. And, you know, even the uniform, the kit that we wore was a little bit different. The granddad collars, the black and white. It was all marketed in a way to try and be successful. And you know, the hospitality, I think even it was in the top 10 of party cities in the world. In the top 10, it was, you know, and you got Rio and London and Glasgow and all these great party towns. Little old Newcastle was thrown in there. You know, it was an enjoyable time to be around.
That was the reason we couldn't show you on a Saturday, because Keezy and I would never have survived Friday night in Newcastle. That was the problem.
I have to say.
I always remember seeing you, Andy. I remember coming up to you as if it was a morning game on the Sunday, about noon game, about 12 morning, and there'd be a big, big cup of coffee there and a big bottle of water for you as well. You're slightly dehydrated. You just give me a little gentleman's nod to say, good morning, morning. I'll be all right come match day. I'll be fine. A little bit glassy eye, but you and Martin was bang on form as always.
I don't think I'd get the same warm reception nowadays as I used to.
No. You're public enemy number one.
Yeah, he is. You're about as popular as Piles.
I got the same feeling as well.
Now, here's something else that I've always wanted to discuss. Amongst the many things that Arsene Wenger's recently mentioned, law changes, and David Ellery, by the way, Warren, I don't know if you know, 179 since he took over in charge of IFAB, 179 law changes. Anyway, here's one I've always thought about, and I'll tell you the incident that got me thinking this way. I'm at Coventry one night. I'll come back to that. The change is, if you're fouled in the box, you get up and take the pen. Now, 9 times out of 10, you know, maybe the taker is confident and will do so. But this particular night at Coventry, the famous West End, as Coventry fans will remember, at the home of football, Highfield Road, we're playing Newcastle United. And we've actually played quite well. When this prick at right back decides to sally forth, as Bob Paisley would describe it, into our box, Andy, and then took off.
Yes.
And then took off. I mean, honestly, I'm laughing the extravagance with which he went over. And I remember.
Are you saying it was a dive, Richard? Are you saying it was a dive?
Jeez, Andy, honestly, this boy invented diving. And I thought to myself, he would not have got up and taken that penalty. But of course, Shearer did, smashed it in, and they went on to beat us. Now, if
who was it, Richard?
If Warren, you'd had to take that penalty, would you have been?
Was it Warren?
would you have been encouraged more to stay on your feet?
I can let you know by I've learnt my lesson. I did that against actually for Wimbledon against Newcastle.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of simulation as I went over. I had to obviously be careful. You're saying about being good looking. I didn't want to hurt my legs or my face. So I've managed to get out of the way of this awful tackle that could have snapped me in half and been ruthless. But I was managed to get out of the way. And I got up and I actually took the penalty for Wimbledon. And
did you?
Pavel Sonacek saved it.
Ah.
And that was the reason that I would never do it again.
Yeah. So, but you did do it again that day. You went over that day. It was a shocking piece of simulation. And, of course, the penalty led to Shearer getting up and smashing it in. And I've always said that I think that it would discourage people that don't take penalties. They wouldn't go over quite as easily. And there, I think, is the evidence that you've just given me. There you are, Andy. And the next time Wenger's out, we'll mention that to him.
Yeah, we will mention some scandalous.
I mean,
never
I think,
get me diving.
No,
tell you that much.
No.
Can I tell you a quick story about Alan Shearer taking a penalty as well?
Yes,
against Sheffield Wednesday. You're talking about someone that loves scoring goals, and Alan and Andy, you're attest to this. So, Ruud Gullit's got the sack. We lost against Sunderland. He's gone. He's gone back to Holland. I know he's a big person on your show as well with Ruud. So he's gone. Bobby Robson comes in. Alan's back in the lineup. We play Sheffield Wednesday at home. Bobby's come on the Thursday afternoon, had a little meeting. Alan, I want you to play forward. You're going to score goals, blah, 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 blah. So Paul Robinson is a young player that's just bursting into the scene. He's been given the opportunity. Played against Sunderland, got took off. Alan and big Duncan Ferguson have played. So we're playing Sheffield Wednesday. I don't know how it happened, but we're winning like 6-0 by the 70th minute. So Bobby's, again, the magic wand has come into it, but we're winning 6-0. Paul Robinson gets substituted in. A couple of minutes later, he wins a penalty. Big Al has already got 4 goals. He's already scored, got dropped the week before by Ruud. Now he's gone and scored 4 goals. We get a penalty. Paul Robinson grabs the ball, as you just said. He's been fouled. He wants to take it. He's from Darlington. He's got 25 of his family members in the stadium all wanting to see him score a goal. Al goes over to him and Paul says, "Can I take the penalty?" Alan's choice words. I don't know whether I can use this.
Yes,
on here,
you can. We're on the podcast.
Fuck off.
Yes, you can.
Okay. Turn around and said, "Fuck off." Took the ball off of him, put the ball down, smashed it, and he's got five goals. And Alan, as Paul Robinson ran over to him, Alan went, "Don't ever fucking do that again." I'm enough. So Paul was deflated. He got dropped for Alan. He wanted to take the penalty with 25 of his family members. We're winning 6-0, and Alan's already got 4 goals. Tries to get the ball off him, tells him to F off, and then afterwards, even has the audacity to say, "Don't ever do that again." So that was the last we see of Paul Robinson. Paul Robinson never played again. Alan went on to score 260 goals, and that was the end of that.
Were he listening, Warren, he would correct you and say 260 plus, I think 36, 37 from the old First Division, and one that Andy took correct. Off him on a Monday Night Football. So he's very much aware that the 260 leaves him short when we come to talking about his career goals. But then I suppose that's what made him as good as he was, isn't it?
Yeah, he was phenomenal. I mean, I was blessed and lucky enough to have like Les Ferdinand and them two playing together. And people asked me, what was the difference? I mean, Les was quicker, better in the air, whatever. But Alan was just ruthless in front of goal. You know, he just loved scoring. And me and Nobby and Gary Speed would finish training and Alan would say, "Where are you two going? Come on, I want to do some crossing and finishing." Even after he'd got 190 goals, 200 goals, he still wanted more.
Yeah.
And just
that's
self-driven.
That's a measure, Warren.
Yeah, it is. It is, Andy. You know, he was never one to to deviate. Ian Rush, the great finisher he was, he said he's not the best finisher in the world, but he's the best goal scorer because he just smashes everything in the back of the net. He's nothing. And it's all self-driven. And as I said, it's only afterwards, Richard, like you say, you think about things, and we've had a year to think about the pandemic and being around players like that. And you sometimes when you're playing with them for 6-7 years, you just take it for granted. Now you look back and think, that's what he was. That's what made him different to a Les Ferdinand, a Robbie Fowler, Teddy Sheringham, was what he was like in the box and in training. And he, you know, anyone that knows Alan, he's just self-driven and loves scoring goals. He was a monster.
And when you think about it, and he had the handicap of dragging that six berth arse around with him. I mean, my goodness, how he ever got near 100 goals is still a surprise to me.
If you're talking about Instagram as well, if you ever watch him on Instagram, he rides his bike, and he's one of them that hated pre-season. So we would get out for pre-season, we'd be running. He may do like a quarter of a mile and his head would start rolling. It would start rolling around. And so if you ever watch him when he's doing his bike exercise, after about a mile, his head starts rolling around, but he keeps going on the bike and he's got that thing. Why do I need to run? Why have I got to run? I just want to score goals. And that's what made it the striker he was. But he still does it now. The head keeps starting to roll after he goes about half a mile of running.
Well, now we're all going to watch, aren't we?
Watch it. What you do? I was laughing the other day. I was watching him doing some advert. Promoting something on his Instagram, and his head starts rolling after about 30 seconds.
Well, listen, Wazza, it's been brilliant. Thank you for talking to us. Most weeks, Warren, we leave this saying to our guests, will you rejoin us? I mean, I'd love to revisit this. It's been absolutely brilliant, and continued success over there. Do really wish you well. It's been like I said, it was a gamble,
thanks,
but it's worked out well.
I'd also like to say, Keezy, thanks, Warren, for being part of the best game I ever commented on. I think you played 96, the 4-3-96 game at Anfield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. It was a brilliant occasion. And it goes down as one of the best. It had it all. It had everything. And the images of Kevin over the board at the end, it was... And again, that's what makes our game so special. And, you know, that's why we love, you know, revisiting it, and we're passionate about it now, and we're still talking about the Premier League. Because I think, you know, hopefully we was all part of that time. You know, people remember that time with affection because it was so great. We, you know, we had fun, we played. It meant a lot to everybody. It ticks all the boxes that maybe sometimes we miss a little bit now, but it's always a pleasure. You know,
I agree with you. I love
listening to, you know, people talk about the game, and
we all
want the game to get better, and we want the best for the game and the best people in it. And you know, as I said, I was lucky enough to be in that time, but also I was lucky enough to work with you, and you know, Andy in particular, you know, Richard, we was always a player, but Andy gave me the best advice as a pundit. You know, I remember when you said to me, you know, don't try and cover everything, cover the things you're passionate about.
Yeah,
and that's one thing that I've always took on to my broadcasting thing. You know, I don't just waffle about everything that's gone on. Something that gets me going inside is something that I go with. So I want to thank you both because you made my career great. Being involved in that Sky in that time, and also afterwards, the advice and everything you've done. Well, so it's an absolute pleasure, gentlemen.
You humble us.
Thank you, Warren.
I think my advice probably would have been more along the lines of don't bother, but I mean, that was many years ago.
By the way, Keezy, I'm sure that's what I meant to say.
One other thing, right? Here's a little piece of trivia for you. That night after the 4-3, Newcastle, I think we all felt, had blown it, that Liverpool's title bid gained momentum. Do you remember what happened to Liverpool in the very next game? Nobody will. They came up against a very good side who you have berated and belittled, Mr. Barton, so far in this programme.
Commentary.
Yes, beaten at home.
Commentary.
Beaten
they didn't win a game, did they?
We went to Anfield and beat them. Yeah, magnificent.
Was it in love that scored? Yeah, was it in love that scored?
Dion Dublin, I think, got one Anfield Road end.
Oh, Dion. Yeah. Big Dion. Yeah. Oh, big Dion.
Yeah, and that season, Liverpool ended another title challenge. There you go.
See, that's why you're one of the best, Richard. That's why you're the best, my friend. You remember something like that. We just remember the big games. You remember the crap games.
Correct.
No, that just makes me sad, Warren, honestly. Well, sir, thank you again. Look after yourself. Give our best to everybody that end, eh?
Thank you. All the best to you.
Take care, buddy.
Guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.
God bless. Cheers, Paul.
Well, thoroughly good guy, Andy. And if I hope the Geordies forgive him for spending time with me. I hope that doesn't in any way blot his copybook.
Warren. No, I know. It might for a second, but they'll soon forget. It's good, great lad, Warren.
Warren, yeah. Absolutely. And it was interesting, wasn't it, how he said we had players. We said that. We had players that perhaps the style at Wimbledon didn't give them the opportunity to express themselves, but they got that chance elsewhere. And he was one of them. Really good. Yeah. And also interesting, Andy, what he said about wide fullbacks going wide and how Kevin maybe was the forerunner in that respect, but would never get the credit for doing so.
Well, of course he would. No, because Kevin's British. Of course he wouldn't. It has to have been a foreign coach that brought all these innovations to our game.
Anyway,
absolutely.
Follow us, please, if you've enjoyed it. There's a whole series of these available now. Going forward, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Keys and Grey Pod, A-N-D, Keys and Grey Pod. Thank you for listening. Tell your mates where we are. We're building and enjoying, and we will be back at this same time. Available next week from wherever you get your pods. I'll see you soon, Andy.
All right, Paul. Talk to you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.